All right. Welcome, everyone. If you have your Bibles, if you could turn with me to the book of Hebrews. Book of Hebrews. It's in the New Testament. We're going to be looking at chapter 11, verses 17 through 19. Book of Hebrews, chapter 11, verses 17 through 19. All right. I know some of our leaders told me not to do this, but I'm going to do it anyhow. All right. So just a quick clarification for this Tuesday and Wednesday when we have the prayer gathering. It's everything that Tufu shared, but it's not necessarily just like if you're serious about intercession, right? Doesn't matter who you are, where you are, but we really want to gather people who have a heart for intercession and really being able to intercede on behalf of what God is going to do this upcoming weekend. So if you have time, come join us. Great. If you don't, then great. Study hard. All right? All right. So here we go. Hebrews 11, 17 through 19. We've been going over this series on building this culture of faith in our church. And so, as we've been studying from the book of Hebrews, especially chapter 11, 6 tells us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. And so, when you think about establishing this culture of faith, it's really about being able to please God. It's really about being able to live our lives in such a way that it brings pleasure to God. And so, when you think about that language that it uses, that it pleases God, it's the language of worship. So when we live in faith, it's really an expression of our worship or the expression of the worthiness of the God that we worship. And so when you think about faith, I mean, this is how it's supposed to function. That as we step out in faith, it's not so that, wow, we have these cool experiences. That we were able to finally muster up enough strength to talk to that person about Jesus or, you know, how was your weekend? Great. But no, how was your week? Oh, it was awesome. I went to church and I was able to worship God and they're looking at you like, you weirdo, but it doesn't matter, right? It's not about those experiences, but really what faith is about is it's really about bringing pleasure to God's heart. And that's why we step out and that's why we make commitments and that's why we make certain decisions that we wouldn't normally decide to do. So to establish this culture of faith, what we've talked about so far is, first of all, we need to start from having a fear of God. And we talked about fear of God. It's really about having this intimacy of knowing God. And not only that, but it's this sense of abandonment or being able to surrender to God. And last week, we talked about how we have to find our identity in God. It's about identification. What do we identify with that are in our lives that gives us that sense of purpose, security, and so forth? And this afternoon, we want to talk about the fourth element, which is tenacity. I think this is the Merriam-Webster. Is it Webster? Webster Dictionary? It's Webster, right? Okay, this is how they define tenacity. Sorry, I didn't write down which dictionary I found this on. It says, persistence in maintaining, adhering to, or seeking something that is of value or that is desired. It's this persistence in maintaining or adhering to, that you're sticking to it, or you're seeking something, and the thing that you are seeking, it has great value, or it's you desire it. It's very desirable. So I believe that it's with this persistence that we need to develop our faith in seeking God and worshiping God, okay? I want to start off with this quick exercise. I have, all right, so we have an athlete, we have an inventor, we have a politician, and we have our literary expert, I don't know what you want to call her, famous writer of our days. All right, so first, do you guys know who that is, right? Michael Jordan, right? From the Bulls, number 23. If you guys don't know who Michael Jordan is, shame on you. All right, Michael Jordan. Interesting fact about Michael Jordan, he didn't make his high school basketball team. And he's the greatest basketball player. In fact, I would say he's probably one of the greatest athletes of our generation. This is what he said, actually, about his own game. He said, and I quote, "I have missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I have lost almost 300 games. On 26 occasions, I have been entrusted to take the game-winning shot. How many guys, we dream of that opportunity, that game-winning fade away, right? 26 occasions, and I missed. I have failed over and over and over again, and that is why I succeed. Second gentleman you see there, who is that? Thomas Edison, and we know his famous story about inventing the filament with the light bulb, right? His elementary school teacher once said that he was too stupid to learn anything. And so this is his quote. He says, I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that do not work. And it was the 10,001 that finally worked. Okay? Third gentleman, who is that? Winston Churchill, one of my heroes. The great lion, right? Interesting fact about Winston Churchill. He was defeated in every public office that he ever ran for, except for one, which is, that's right, the greatest office that you could possibly have in the United Kingdom, which is prime minister, at the age of 62. And he became a very important figure during World War II. And this is what he said. He said, success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. It is the courage to continue that counts. And the last, do you know who that is? J.K. Rowling. Really interesting fact about her. Submitted her manuscript for Harry Potter. 12 different publishing houses, and they all said no. By this time, she was divorced. She had a single daughter. She was living in poverty. But she continued to persevere, and it was the 13th publishing house that hit the jackpot. And we have our entire world of Harry Potter, right? What do these people have in common? You think about these people, and what is it that they have in common, besides that they're very successful? I believe that one thing that they have in common, there's many things, but one thing that stands out to me is that they show tremendous tenacity in the face of trials and the failures that they experience in their lives. And it was this tenacity that helped them to succeed. And ultimately, it's because they were able to find faith, right? It's faith that drove them. It was faith in themselves and in their own ability. But for us, as believers of Christ, we know that faith is not about believing in ourselves, but it's about believing who God declares himself to be in our lives. And so when you think about that, the trials and the tests that we encounter in our lives, what they do is they begin to test us in the convictions that we hold to. And they show us the reality of our faith. I mean, that's often what happens, especially in our Christian walk. Everything's hunky-dory, and we're walking along, and then boom, we fall on our faces because of whatever trial that we faced. Maybe something happened at school. Things didn't go the way that you wanted. Something happened at work. There was an expectation that this door was going to be open, and then it closed, and then what does that do? That tests your faith. It really helps us to see ultimately where our convictions lie. So when the trials come, they ultimately help us to see where we are in what? In our relationship with God. And I believe that if we want to develop this culture of faith, we need to develop a faith that is tenacious. So let's go ahead and read this together. Hebrews 11 from 17 through 19. Hebrews 11 from 17 through 19. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac from the dead. Okay. All right, well, we'll see how this goes this afternoon, because as I was trying to prepare for this message, I mean, there were just so many things that were coming into my mind. And so I was writing down everything, but I just feel like there's two burdens that God really placed in my heart for this. So I'm going to try to talk about those things as best as I can, okay?
One thing that we see here is when you think about the story of Abraham, we're not going to go too deeply into it because if you guys remember last semester, we talked about this exact situation. And so if you're more interested in the background and if this sounds not right, that God actually called him to sacrifice his son. I mean, we went more in depth into it last semester. So, you know, you can listen to that specific message online. But, you know, one thing that really stands out to us is really the audacity of the faith that Abraham possessed. Because the story is really about the promise that God gives to Abraham. And that promise is that I'm going to bless you and your descendants so that your descendants and you can be a blessing to the nations. And so Abraham receives this incredible promise, but the problem, and there's a minor problem, and the problem simply is what? He's getting older and older and older and older and older in age, and he doesn't have any children. And so that's a big problem. Because if the promise that God made to you was, it's going to be through your descendants that I'm going to bless you so that you can be a blessing to the nations, but if you don't have any descendants, then that's a big problem. And so we see that Abraham and Sarah, his wife, tried to take matters into their own hands and everything got just screwed up royally. But then finally, God comes through. And so he's able to have his son. But it's this very son that God says to go into sacrifice. And so if you're reading this, I mean, it doesn't really make sense, right? Because God brought this promise, and then that promise is going to be fulfilled through his son, yet it's the son that God is calling Abraham to sacrifice, and then so if he sacrifices his son, then the promise of God is never going to be realized. So God is, in fact, not being faithful to his promise. Does that make sense? And so, you know, like, I'd be scratching my head, but there is no hesitation on Abraham's part. He steps out in faith, and this is what the Word of God tells us, that he had this audacity to believe in God to be able to actually fulfill the promise that he made, because even if that meant that Abraham sacrificed his one and only son, he believed that God would bring him back from the dead. And that's tremendous faith. That you would believe that even if you killed your own son, that God would still be faithful to the promise that he made and he would bring him back from the dead. And I just feel like for us as a church, that this is the type of faith that he wants to instill into our lives. That's this bold, this audacious faith that is able to step out because we believe in what Ephesians 3:20 tells us, that God is able to do immeasurably more than what we can ask of him. And I'm wondering this afternoon, how many of us actually believe in those words? That when God says that I am able to do immeasurably more than what you can ask, that how many of us, when we receive that word, we're like, yeah, God, I'm willing to step out in faith because I believe in you. In fact, when you think about the ministry of Jesus, this is the type of faith that he wanted to breathe into his disciples. And so he teaches them the type of faith that they needed to possess. This persistent, this audacious faith. And that's why he tells two specific parables, and we want to look at those parables together. So if you could turn to Luke 18, that's the first parable. Luke 18. And if you don't turn to it, that's fine, because I have it on the PowerPoint. And this is the parable that he tells to encourage his disciples to have this persistent, this tenacious faith, this audacious faith, right? He says, in a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared about men. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with a plea, grant me justice against my adversary. For some time, he refused, but finally, he said to himself, even though I don't fear God and I don't care about men, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually wear me out with her coming. And then Jesus says, listen to what the unjust judge says, and will not God bring about justice for his chosen one who cry out to him day and night? And so all of us are familiar with this parable that there is this widow that comes to this judge and says, give me justice, give me justice, give me justice. And I don't know if you've ever been in the situation where someone is just constantly nagging at you. Or to the point it finally wears you down and you're like, oh, all right. I mean, that happens to me and my kids all the time. They're constantly nagging at me and I know it's not good for them, but I'm like, oh, leave me alone. All right, here it is. Lord, forgive me. Here you go. But when you think about the story, I mean, yeah, we know the story and we understand the meaning, but there's an assumption that Jesus makes. What is the assumption that Jesus makes in this parable that he tells? And the assumption that Jesus makes is that the judge that this widow goes to actually has the power to make a difference in her life. So it's not that she's wondering if he's going to do this or is he able to do it, but it's a question of when is he going to do it, because in her mind, she is determined. She's going to wear him out, even if that means driving him to his grave. That she's going to be persistent. So it's not a question of can God do this or can this judge do this? It's a question of when is he going to do it? That's the assumption that Jesus makes, that this judge actually has the power to do what she asks of him, right? And so again, if you flip back a little bit to Luke 11, 5 through 13, Jesus is telling them a similar parable about prayer and persisting in asking God. And he says this, then he said to them, suppose one of you has a friend and he goes to him at midnight and says, friend, lend me 3 loaves of bread because a friend of mine on a journey has come to me and I have nothing to set before him. Then the one inside answered, don't bother me. The door is already locked and my children are with me in bed. I can't get up and give you anything. I tell you, though he will not get up and give him the bread because he is his friend, yet because of the man's boldness, he will get up and give him as much as he needs. So I tell you, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For whoever asks receives. Whoever seeks finds. And for him who knocks, the door will be opened. And he begins to describe that God is a good God who desires to give good gifts to his children. And once again, we see the story and yes, we understand it. Maybe some of us have even experienced this. My wife and I, we experience this on a nightly basis. We're sleeping, and then all of a sudden we hear our kids cry, and we're thinking, we're both in bed. We don't want to get up. You get up. No, you get up. You get up. No, you get up. Like, oh, fine. It's because we love our children, fine. And we go and we tend to them. But what's the assumption that Jesus is making in this story? The assumption is that this man actually has 3 loaves of bread, right? It's not like he's lacking the loaf of bread. It's not like this friend comes to him and says, hey, can I get 3 loaves of bread? Because I have a friend out of town. He's visiting me. And he says, no, sorry, I don't have anything. No, he says, I actually have it, but I just don't want to be bothered. And then so the incredible statement that Jesus makes is that he doesn't get up and give him the bread because he is his friend. He says he gets up because what his friend did was so gutsy. It's like this shameless audacity. Have you ever been wowed by someone who was just so gutsy? I mean, literally just shameless, and what they were asking of you was so audacious. You're like, wow, I don't care for this person, but man, it took a lot of guts. So I'm going to do what this person is asking me to do. And so when you think about it, the way in which Jesus is setting up the story, I mean, it's ridiculous. Because he comes to him in the middle of the night. Who comes to you in the middle of the night? No one. If you come to my house in the middle of the night, good luck. I'll see you around 6 o'clock in the morning. I hope you're still there when I wake up. And then I'll open the door and give you whatever you want. I mean, it's ridiculous that he comes to him in the middle of the night. He's already at sleep. And Jesus says he gets up not because of the friendship, but because this guy actually had the gall and the nerve to do it And he's so impressed. And he says, you know what? Here's the bread. When I look at these pictures, this is what it means to have tenacity in our faith. It's like this shameless audacity that we're not worried about our dignity. We don't care what other people think. That there is something that we so desperately want that even if that means we're going to go to our friend in the middle of the night, we know that it's going to be a bother to them. But we're still willing to do it because there's something that we so desire and we want so badly in our lives. And I believe it's this kind of audacious, persistent faith that Jesus is wanting to just breathe into our lives. I mean, just imagine what it would be like if our church was filled with people and we had this culture of faith where we were able to step out in this audacious faith, in this persistent, this persevering faith, and asking God to do the impossible. I mean, I was thinking, you know what a picture of someone who is so desperate, you know what that picture looks like? It looks like my mom when my sister was, I think she was around 5 years old. We were still living in Korea. And in my neighborhood, you know, my friends and I, we used to always play baseball and everyone would play out in the parking lot. Until one day we were playing baseball, I was out on the outfield. And then this guy was swinging his bat because he was going to get ready to hit the ball. And my sister was playing with her friends, and she got too close. And when he actually swung the bat, he hit her right here. And it just cut her open. And she started just screaming and wailing. And I was just like frozen. I'm like, oh, that's my sister. Oh, shoot, what do I do? And then all of a sudden, da-da-da-da, from the apartment, you see my mom just rushing out. And she had her apron on. She didn't have any shoes on. But she heard the screams of her child. She still had gloves. She was you guys know kimchi, right? It's the Korean dish. She had her gloves. She didn't care what she looked like. She came. She saw my sister. She picked her up. And she started screaming at people in front of her, get out of my way. And so I was taking this picture. I was taking this sight in. And I was thinking, if I didn't know her, I'd be like, who is this crazy woman carrying this child who was bleeding all over her face, screaming, get out of my way? And I was thinking, well, you know, maybe we should call the ambulance, right? But she's like, I'm not waiting for them. She picked up my sister and she ran all the way to the hospital. I mean, granted, there was a hospital that was near us. It wasn't like she ran for 20 miles, but she ran all the way to the hospital, screaming at people to get out of her way. How do I know this? Because I was running after her. And when she got to the hospital, she said, you have to do something now. And of course, they did something now because it was pretty bad. And she ended up getting lots of stitches. And thank God that it was just stitches that didn't actually damage her eye. But I'll never forget that picture of my mom. So desperate. Because there was a need in her life. And that need was to save her daughter. You have to believe and you have to know that God is able to do immeasurably more than what you are able to ask. That this is the kind of God that we serve. That God is a God of the impossibles. I want to show us this video. And it's a really neat testimony of some of the things that God is able to do. Okay? So it's a little bit long. It's about 10 minutes, but I think it's going to be worth it. So why don't we go ahead and watch this video? And as you are watching this video, just think to yourself, what does it mean for me to believe in a God who says that nothing is impossible? Okay? Let's watch this video together. Okay. Man, how cool of a testimony is that, right? Person you pray for and heal, that person turns out to be his best friend. I mean, it's just like God setting everything up. That was the very place that Isaac, Abraham, was going to sacrifice his son. that God is a God of the impossible. And it's this audacious, this tenacious faith that says, God, you have to do it, you have to do it, you have to do it. You know, when Jesus says, seek, ask, and knock, it's not this one time of seeking, asking, knock. What he's telling his disciples, you continue to seek, you continue to knock, and you continue to ask. Until whatever it is that you are seeking will be given to you, whatever it is that you are asking for, that it will be handed to you, and the door that you are so desperately wanting to open, that it will be open to you. That's what it means to possess this audacious, this tenacious faith. And then so you think about this and you're thinking, well, that's great, but so what? I mean, the question is so what, right? Because I could preach a sermon on having audacious faith. But it doesn't make an impact. And that's the frustrating part. And that's where I was wrestling with this sermon so much in my heart. Because I was thinking, okay, we can talk about this. We can teach about Jesus' parables. We can show a video, and people will be like, oh, that's so cool. But at the end of the day, the question is, so what? And I just almost feel like, it's kind of like, you know, like if you go into that football locker room. I mean, can you imagine Super Bowl's tonight? 49ers, you have Jim Harbaugh, right? The greatest, like, rah-rah. If you're a Baltimore fan, you have Ray Lewis. I mean, if you've heard some of his speeches on YouTube, man, even if you don't believe in it, if he was selling me a vacuum cleaner after I heard him, I would buy the vacuum cleaner. I mean, he is like, when he's like possessed by something when he's talking. So it's almost like being in a locker room and you hear the rah-rah speech and you get, yeah, rah-rah-rah, and then you rush out and then there's nothing. There's no Super Bowl. There's nothing. And then so you're like, oh, I got really excited, but I'm just living my normal life. Because the question is, yes, Abraham possessed this audacity in his faith. Yes, Jesus encouraged his disciples to have this tenacious faith. But why? How is it that they were able to demonstrate such faith? This guy who walked around Jerusalem praying for people. How was he able to do that? And I believe it's because they were possessed by God's promise. That they were people who were possessed by God's promise, and that makes all the difference in the world. The reason why some of us, in our faith journey, that it doesn't impact our lives is because you are not possessed by God's promise. Can you imagine if you were actually possessed by God's promise? That God was going to use you to bless the nations. That when you wake up in the morning, I mean, I was just thinking about this today, that if you every single morning woke up and you were expecting God to do the impossible, whatever it was, that you were possessed by this promise that God was a God of the impossible and that he was calling you to participate in that. I mean, I was just thinking to myself how excited we would be every single morning. Just thinking about, okay, what is that impossible thing that God is going to do? And we're going to be so desperately looking for it because we have been possessed by this promise. That when he was sharing why he does that, I mean, did you catch his heart? That he was possessed by this promise that God called him to this ministry of reconciliation. So that when he goes and he prays for people, just think about that. How many of us would have the audacity to right after church being so inspired by this message and say, you know what, I'm going to go to the six pack and I'm just going to ask people. I'm not even going to introduce myself. I'm going to ask people, are you sick? Do you need healing? I don't think very many of us would be excited to do that. Maybe we would do that because we feel like, okay, this is part of our obligation of what it means to live out the faith. But he was possessed. And that's a very strong word. Because when you think about the word possessed, I think about exorcist of this little girl being possessed. Have you ever seen that movie? I mean, I saw that movie when I was little, but scared the daylights out of me. But literally, Abraham, he was possessed by God's promise. And that's why he was willing to say, God, if you call me to sacrifice my son, then I'm going to do it because I'm going to believe by faith that you're going to raise him from the dead. Because for him, the ultimate inheritance was not his son. You have to understand this. So many of us, we get stopped in living this Christian life, in living this life full of faith, because the thing that we are aiming for, what God tells us is that that is not the ultimate. For Abraham, the ultimate was not his son. You have to understand this. Because if the ultimate inheritance was his son, then you know what he would have done? He would have guarded his son with all of his heart, and he would have said, God, no, there is no way that you're going to pry this boy away from my fingers. Because this is the ultimate that I'm living for. But for Abraham, the ultimate was not his son. The ultimate was what? It was God's promise to use him to be a blessing to the nations. The ultimate inheritance for Abraham was the nations. And he said, God, my son, I love him. He's important to me, but he's a small equation of what you are calling me to do. And even though I don't know how you're going to work, but you're going to work it out. I'm going to believe that you're going to work it out so that I will still keep my eyes on that ultimate inheritance, which is the nations. Some of us, when it comes to, okay, having a faith that is so audacious, so bold, it doesn't resonate to you because ultimately you don't know what God's promises are for your life. If the promise that you believe that God has for your life is, you know what? God is going to give you good grades. God is going to give you that degree. God's going to give you those relationships. God's going to give you a good experience when you come to church. That God is going to ease your pain. That all he's going to do is that he's going to allow you to experience his love. I mean, those are good things. But if it stops there and you don't realize the greater goal that God has for you is transformation. That it's not about you feeling good about yourself. It's not about God coming and easing your pain. That there's something greater. That he ultimately wants you to be more like him. That he wants you to have his desires and his goal. That if it stops there, then you know what? You have nothing that is impossible to be living for. And so when you step out of these doors, life is as usual, because there is nothing that you are aiming for that is impossible for you. Let me ask you, this past week, as you were going to class, as you were going to work, what was that one thing that was so impossible that you were aiming for and that you so desperately needed God for? I guarantee you that if there is this mission impossible that you are aiming for, then when you step out of these doors, you're going to realize, God, I cannot do this. You're the only one who can do it. So I come before you. And I depend on you with all of my heart, with all of my strength, and with all of my might. And not only do I depend on you, I know you're going to come through. It's not a question of if you're going to come through, but it's a question of when you're going to come through. So every single moment of my life, I'm looking forward to that. That you accomplishing that impossible thing. I mean, just imagine the sense of urgency and excitement and purpose that you would have in your life if there was that impossible thing that you were aiming for every single day of your life. That's the problem with our church. We can talk about a topic like this of creating this culture of faith. But if we use that faith for something that is possible, then we don't need God. And so what is this faith if God is removed? There's so many different ways and forms in which you can feel good about yourself. There's so many different methods that you can pursue to ease your pain, to give you a good life, to give you good friends. But following Jesus isn't about the good stuff, but it's aiming for the impossible. And my heart was so burdened. And I feel like this is God's heart. He wants to challenge us as a church to aim for the impossible. Because for Abraham, this was the impossible. For some of us, we don't know what God's promises are that we are living for. And I was so sharply reminded of this. I shared a little bit of this past access. That even the good things, that if they begin to take center stage, that it veers us, even our hearts, away from the things that God wants. And I was just thinking about this message, and I was just thinking about, man, I'm so disappointed in my church. And then God comes, and of course, he always does this, right? If you start pointing one finger, guess what? There's three fingers that are pointing back at you. And God began to challenge me to say, Ben, what is it that you are living for that is impossible? Because for so long, I felt like, okay, here we are, struggling to build this church. And we have certain goals that we want to accomplish. There's certain things that are coming up for us. And we want to experience this. We want to experience this many baptism. We want to experience this many people. We want these classes to be this large. Not only that, we want to make an impact in the community and all those things. And those are good things. But God began to bring my heart. I still remember this. When I was an undergrad, when I fell madly in love with God, that it wasn't just about, God, you love me, but it was about, God, you placing your heart in me. And it was about asking God for the nations. There was a song that I used to always sing. Ask of me, I will give you the nations as an inheritance for you. Here am I, send me to the nations as an ambassador for you. And I used to sing these songs for hours, asking God to give me the nations, the nations, the nations. For me, that was the impossible goal. That was my inheritance. And I remember God challenging me this week to look at the mirror, look into the mirror and to see what it is that your heart is settling for. And your heart is settling for a successful church. Not asking me to release my power. So that even though you might be little of strength, that I can use you to reach the nations. I had to repent so much. Because I realized the very things that I want for you guys that I wasn't living for. Do you know the promises that God has for you? It's not just about feeling good. It's not just about thinking that I am a good person. But it's about the ministry of reconciliation. It's about God giving you the power so that you can heal people. So it's about God giving you the power so that as you begin to pray for people, that he will give you insights into their lives. It's about God sending you out to make a difference in this world. Just think about this world and how big the world is. Think about all the problems that are represented in this world. And thinking, how can I as an individual make a difference? You cannot make a difference. But God can. I feel like some of us, we don't know what the promises are. And then secondly, for some of us who think that we know the promises, you are settling for far less than what it is that God has created you for. And what happens is we have a vision or we get a passion. And we think, okay, this is what God is calling me to do, and this is what I'm aiming for, and these are the vehicles that God is going to use. Maybe it is going to be your studies. And that you're going to do well so that you can get that job, so that you can be in that place to do whatever it is that God is wanting you to do. But somehow in the process of doing that, you lose sight of the God of the impossible. And when God says you have to surrender that, you say, no, God, this is my inheritance. In fact, what God is saying is that that is not your inheritance. That is just a small equation of what I am calling you to do. And when you are able to surrender that thing to me, that I'm able to use that to do so much more, so much greater. And the reason why it's so hard for us to step out in faith is because we hijack God. What is the Isaac in your life? What does that represent for you in your life? Think about that. And if God was to come and say, you have to give that up, would we be able to give it up because we have this understanding that God is so much greater and we don't know how he's going to work, but we're going to believe by faith that even if we give it up, that he has the ability to be able to resurrect that thing from the dead so that you can accomplish God's promises in your life. Abraham was possessed by God's promise. That Abraham was possessed by God's promise. And it's not the big things. Trust me, it's not the big things. It starts with the little things. You know, this past week we received a check from one of our alumni. Well, 2 weeks ago. He used to go to our Ann Arbor church. He's moved away since. He's working. Sent a check to our church as a love offering. And when I saw that, I was so blessed that it was a small step of faith that he took, because I know his situation. And he could have said, you know what, that was my undergrad experience, but I've moved on. And there are certain things in my life that I'm aiming for, so I need to save up. This is my money. But he gave to our church. Why? Because he believes in a God of the impossible. And I'm so proud that I know that even though we are a small church, that we can challenge people in our faith to take steps that are impossible for them. I mean, I was even thinking about this, and I'm going to pick on a couple of you here. I was just even thinking about our focus ministry. And I know that it's only a small number of people, so you guys know exactly who I'm talking about. I know that they are still imperfect people. But, I mean, I've been so blessed by you guys to realize that you're coming out to Access, you're coming out to prayer gatherings, and you don't have to. That this is not a place where it's very comfortable for you because you don't have many peers your age. Because meeting on campus, it's not the most convenient. But you're setting an example that church is not about having this consumer mindset. But it's about stepping out in faith. And even though it is impossible, even though it is uncomfortable, that there is something greater that we're aiming for. And so it's about living in obedience and being a testimony. I know some of you are thinking, man, this guy is crazy. Why is he yelling at me so much? What's the big deal? It's a huge deal. Trust me, it's a huge deal. Because it's about you connecting to the heart of your Maker. It's about you connecting to the Father who wants to bless you so abundantly. But the only way that you will be able to receive that blessing is to know who it is that you are following after. And I just feel like this is such a big challenge for us as a church. To know the things that God is promising for us. So the one thing that I want to leave us leave us with is simply this. We need to be a people who are possessed by God's promise. That we need to be a people who are possessed by God's promise. You know, I really pray and hope that the decisions that you make in following after Jesus is because you are possessed by his promise. That when I think about this upcoming retreat, that you're not going for any other reason than to say, God, this is part of my inheritance. And I want to meet with you, that I want to be able to know your heart more. That I want to be possessed by your promise, that I want to be transformed inside out. And I know it's not easy. I know some of you make big sacrifices. I get that. I understand that. This upcoming week, you know, I didn't even realize this, but it's Chinese New Year. And I know for some of you, that's a big sacrifice. And I'm not making light of it because it's a huge family thing. It's difficult decisions that you are making. I know for some of you, there's exams coming up, swamped with school. And I'm not necessarily saying that choosing one over the other is better. But I'm saying that when you make that choice knowing that God has a promise for you. That God has a promise for you. That's it. I think that's really God's heart. And so don't take my word for it. You wrestle in your heart. And you ask God, God, what is it that you are calling me to possess in my life? And if you deeply, truly feel like it's to be a good person and just everything else that people that you see around you are aiming for, then, I mean, I'll try to encourage you, but that's the decision that you need to make. But I'm praying and hoping that God will breathe something that is so much greater, so much deeper, so much wider, that you are willing to step out and say, God, even if I was to die pursuing after this, that for me it will be worthwhile. That I am willing to invest all of my life into this. Because this is so much greater than my own desires and my own dreams. Let's pray together.